You're listening to the African Leaders Series, a production of the International Peace Institute, an independent think tank dedicated to the prevention and settlement of conflict. Coming up, the President of Gabon, Mr. Ali Bongo Ondimba. Enjoy the program.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends and dear colleagues, good afternoon, everybody. It is a great pleasure indeed to welcome to the International Peace Institute and to the Trygve Lie Center, the President of Gabon, Mr. Ali Bongo Ondimba. And of course, also most welcome to all the members of his delegation. Thank you, Mr. President, for being with us today, for participating in our African Leaders series. IPI started the African Leaders series 3 years ago. Our goal is to offer a platform for African statesmen and women to engage with the UN community on key peace and security challenges. That is why, Mr. President, we are extremely pleased that you have accepted our invitation to speak about Gabon's role in the Security Council during its council presidency in the month of March. We are all looking forward to you sharing your vision as the new president of Gabon. Our specific topic today, preventing conflict, the need for a global strategy of the Security Council, is of particular importance. We are looking forward to hearing your views on how to develop such a strategy. By way of introduction, let me just say a few words to mention Gabon's contribution in addressing crises in the broader West African region. As the headquarters of the Economic Community of Central African States, ECCAS, Gabon plays an important role in facilitating diplomatic initiatives and in developing African peacekeeping capacities and capabilities in the region. Indeed, Gabon has demonstrated its commitment to these challenges by hosting ECCAS peacekeeping training exercises, and Gabon is also contributing to international peacekeeping, including to the UN missions in the Central African Republic and in Chad. Mr. President, we commend these efforts and we look forward to hearing your views on the prevention of conflict based on these experiences. Following the President's remarks, my colleague Warren Hogue, who is the Vice President for External Relations, will moderate the question and answers session. So it is now my great pleasure to give the floor to President Bongo for his remarks. Mr. President, the floor is yours.
Monsieur le président de l'Institut international de la paix, Excellences,
Your Excellencies,
ambassadeurs,
ladies, gentlemen, ambassadors,
mesdames et messieurs,
ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests.
Je voudrais tout d'abord.
I would like firstly to thank you for the opportunity offered to me to speak to you in such a particular circumstances, characterized by the beginning of the Gabonese presidency of the United States Security Council. As you know, this month, Gabon has the honor and the privilege to preside over the work and deliberations of our council. This presidency, just like our third mandate, represents for us a pleasant opportunity to reiterate our firm commitment to the UN's ideals for peace. The agenda of the Gabonese presidency, which takes into consideration a number of fundamental concerns of the Security Council, will reach a high point with the public debate on the impact of illegal arms trafficking on peace and security in Central Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, no one ignores any longer the seriousness of these issues. But today, I would like to focus my attention on conflict prevention, an equally important topic on which the Security Council has been working for more than a decade, trying to develop a global strategy. The concept of conflict prevention is getting renewed attention these days. Indeed, how often the UN is requested to intervene highlights the limits of its ability to manage increasingly complex and increasingly costly peacekeeping operations. These limits were mentioned during the debate organized by the Security Council on February 12 of this year on transition and exit strategies. During that debate, relevant observations were made about the high cost of peacekeeping operations, the inadaptable character of their mandates, which configuration must be revised, as well as about long operations that do not produce conclusive results. Among many other examples I could mention, the Central African Republic offers the most emblematic examples of the peacekeeping operations obsolescence. Indeed, for almost 12 years now, this country hosts MISAB, MINURCA, FARMUG, and today, MICROPACS and MINURCAT, even though the mandates of its operation managed to produce the results anticipated by the international community. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, the difficulties and shortcomings experienced with peacekeeping operations have given a new meaning to this old say, which is better safe than sorry. Such awareness requires from us to act upstream in order to avoid the painful efforts associated with any conflict resolution, such as and also the powerlessness and the incoherence of refusing interventions. In other words, acting upstream is prevention. Nowadays, conflict resolution efforts are becoming too costly. They entail peace consolidation and reconstruction costs, something which prevention would help eliminate. Therefore, we must develop a conflict prevention global strategy. UN Secretary Generals over the last 40 years became convinced that conflict prevention must be the cornerstone of the UN security system in the 21st century for the world. Mr. Kofi Annan underscored precisely this when he said, and I quote, "The United Nations has no higher goal, no more profound commitment, and no greater ambition than armed conflict prevention," end of quote. The Security Council is also moving in that direction. And indeed, it is indicated in its 2001 annual report on armed conflict prevention that to be more effective, prevention must appear and be initiated at the early stage of a conflict in order to be more effective. Likewise, the precedence given to prevention was confirmed several years ago at the highest level of our organization, more specifically at the 2005 World Summit, during which heads of state and of government recognized the importance of conflict prevention. Ladies and gentlemen, at the time when the UN is rethinking its approach to produce a real prevention culture, my ambition is to offer to contribute to any conflict prevention strategy it intends to develop. Time has come for us to go from theory to action. What we need to do is to determine the appropriate time for the Security Council to intervene in situations of potential conflicts in order to avoid, once again, a wait-and-see approach, which too often has led to intervening too late for the operation to be called a preventive solution. Setting up an efficient early warning mechanism could allow to solve this issue. As you know, an early warning is the first component of any conflict prevention strategy. It reflects the ambition of the United Nations to go from a reactive strategy to a preventive strategy. Currently, the early warning system of the UN is based on three separate operation offices, which are the Inter-Department of Coordination for Early Warning and Preventive Action, then the Executive Committee for Peace and Security, and lastly, the Secretary General Policy Committee. In my view, this system is too fragmented between the Public Affairs Department, the Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, and UNDP. Unavoidably, this has led to an excessive dispersion of responsibilities, something which, in the end, and I'm sure you will agree, reduces its efficiency. The Security Council must set up, therefore, a top-notch monitoring network system that must perform better. This is why we must establish a single body in charge of monitoring and alerting. Such a system would rely on local UN offices, a network which would cover the main sub-regions that are that tend to have conflict in that regard. I want to remind you that the Brahimi report had already suggested to institutionalize of a single body for early warning and monitoring by creating a Secretary for Information and Strategic Analysis. This novel idea could be used for our new thinking. I would like to highlight, nevertheless, that the performance of this important body will depend on whether or not it will be compatible with the sovereignty of the state, but also of the cooperation with national systems, and also at the sub-regional and the regional level. I'm talking in particular of the rapid warning mechanism of Central Africa, which is in Gabon, of the early warning network of West Africa, ECOWAN, and the one for Eastern Africa, CWAM. In addition, I would like to mention that conflict prevention requires an increased cooperation from countries that own satellites and means of communication of a high level that might help to provide in real time reliable information that allow to better monitor, and this list is not exhaustive, but to better monitor all movements of rebel troops, illicit arms trafficking, trafficking of drugs and other substances, and of course, bounty hunters and private armies. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, the ability to of an early warning system to prevent conflict is undeniable, but its action can also be inefficient. In each case, the role played by the Secretary General through its good offices and its effort for mediation remain critical within its prerogative to alert and notify the Security Council. Therefore, the Security Council should, due to its political weight and its power to decide, take charge and be first in the role of preventing conflicts. Indeed, as we know, the Security Council can have and lead prevention political operations and, as a last resort, decide an intervention. Nevertheless, for the Council to play fully its role, the Secretary General or the warning body must provide to it on a regular basis some early warning reports on a situation that could lead to a conflict. In addition, by integrating an important conflict prevention aspect in its activities, the Council could organize specific meetings in order to review prevention situations in a more sustained and structured way. The systematization of preventing operations could also be useful in strengthening preventive means and resources of the Security Council. I would like to mention the accomplishment and successes of the preventive deployment force in the United Nations in the former Yugoslavian Republic of Macedonia in 95 and 95, and those of the Minurca in the Central African Republic between 98 and 2000, a force of which Gabon was a part of. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, allow me to underscore here that the contribution of the Security Council will not be enough to prevent durably conflicts. Indeed, states also have a very important role, an equally important role. In that sense, they must set up good governance policy and policies that favor national unity. At the political level, the absence of democracy tends to create multiform tensions that lead, in most cases, on crises that can lead to civil wars. That is why we must absolutely consolidate the institutions, guarantee the rule of law in order to allow a diverse expression of any citizen. At the economic and social level, everybody agrees that there cannot be any peace without economic development. We must therefore do everything we can to ensure the development of our country and establish a policy that favors an equitable sharing of resources. Within that task, the help of the civil society and particularly women's organization can be critical. Security being a major pillar of stability, it is important to lead reforms in this important sector that try to set up strong armies that are well-trained, operational, and above all, republican. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, today, the world is facing the threat of a new source of conflicts, and in this context, the preventive approach seems to be the only viable solution, and I'm referring to climatic changes. Global warming has an impact not only on the environment, the health of men and the economy, but also on the stability and the security of states. Its impact are becoming more and more obvious when they occur in developing countries as well as in regions that are stricken by ethnic, cultural, economic, or political problems, considering the risks that are closely related to the spiral of conflicts and the massive exodus that we see. Global warming contributes to increasing poverty and instability in the world. We must quickly act. In that regard, I call on all the governments to adopt long-term strategies in order to stop durably the plague of global warming. Governments must commit themselves firmly and with determination, in as much under the form of adaptation as under the form of attenuation. Indeed, if we wait any longer, might risk maximizing the cost of our efforts, and in fact, such an approach might make irreversible global warming. Gabon, for its part, is firmly acting in this direction, and I seize this opportunity to reiterate our firm support to any initiative that tend to establish a large consensus on a new international agreement to fight against global warming. And I want to also indicate our availability to cooperate with all of the partners and stakeholders. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, within the framework of our quest for peace and development, it seems imperative today to give the Security Council's adequate prevention resources. That is the only way that it will be able to fight efficiently against all kinds of threats to peace and security throughout the world. Well structured and well managed, prevention will guarantee peace and security over the long term, and it will guarantee in such a way our continued development and stability for all our states. Thank you.
Mr. President, thank you very much for those words. We are particularly pleased that you chose IPI as the place to address an audience here in the United Nations community. If I may say, I was particularly pleased that you spoke at one point in terms of the last 40 years, because this is our 40th birthday here at IPI. And IPI, the International Peace Institute, began as the International Peace Academy, and its first mission was to train peacekeepers. So your emphasis on peacekeeping, your emphasis on early warning and prevention are words that are very dear to the research mission here at IPI. We also hear those words increasingly from the African continent, and that also pleases us. We have a close association at IPI with the African Union, and I think it's fair to say that the African community here in the United Nations community views IPI as a place where they are particularly welcome, and their concerns are our concerns. Finally, you mentioned at the end of your speech that a preventive approach is the only viable solution to climate change. Yesterday in this room, we held a large roundtable meeting of ambassadors and experts from the various missions in the UN community on the subject of climate change and specifically on how to carry forward the actions in Copenhagen in December to Cancun, which is the next meeting to be held in Mexico next December. So your words, I'm sure, were well received by this audience. They were certainly well received by those of us at IPI who were very pleased you were here. I would like to throw the floor open to questions for the president. The president has told us he has to leave at 2 o'clock, so that gives us 30 minutes or so. I know this woman here, she asked good questions, so why don't you go first?
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for giving us the honor to listen to you. My name is Jacqueline Spann. I'm the president of Education and Literacy Fund for Africa. And I welcome your comments. They're very important, how you think and what you're adding to the UN agenda. My question is this: how do you deal with the personal agendas of various countries in time of conflict? Personal meaning financial, personal meaning taking land and minerals and various things out of other countries. Personal agendas may be unknown and unforeseen. So how do you deal with that and approach and address those issues included in what you've expressed?
Thank you. I would simply say that when it comes to Africa, we have one common, goal, which is stability. Because we are all of us developing countries. And in order to develop our countries, we need peace and stability. So on our agenda, all of us, all members of the African Union, you will find peace. It is very difficult to pursue one's own agenda if you do not take into consideration, the stability of the continent. We in Gabon, for instance, Gabon could, as you mentioned, decide, well, I have my own agenda. We have enjoyed peace, long stability. So we could be very selfish and say, well, we don't care. We are going to do that. But in our sub-region of Central Africa, right at our doors, there are problems. Civil wars, crisis. So one has to consider that what happens in my neighbor's, garden in his house will affect me. Because in terms of trade, in terms also of the problem of mass exodus of population coming and seeking refuge, and also because we are all connected. So what happens in one country will, of course, affect the other. And for many years, we have tried, you know, to say, well, we don't care. You know, we will have our own agenda. And it did not work. In my sub-region, Central Africa, it is fair to say that it's probably one of the wealthiest in terms of resources of the continent. But still, things are not working. Why? Because some of our neighbors are involved in many crises. And that's why Gabon has always tried to mediate, to help. And now we have Gabonese soldiers in the Central African Republic, but we were also involved in the Congo, where we were involved in monitoring. We also did the same in Burundi and in Chad. So we all have to do that. Otherwise, we will find ourselves 20 years from now with the same problems. So it was very important for us, you know, to the African Union meetings to recognize that peace, stability, two words, very important for the continent. And we have to all work together, achieving, you know, that goal.
Merci. Tout à l'heure,
thank
Monsieur
you
Larson,
very much. A little while ago, Mr. Larson welcomed you, introduced you, Mr. President, by welcoming you here, you know, at IPI. I would like to be a little bit selfish, if you would allow me, and to tell us that we are very honored to welcome you here and to hear you talk about the concerns and the ambitions of the Gabonese Republic in relation to United Nations. And in fact, you've very rightly insisted on the preventive dimension, and that's a concept that goes back to a few decades. Prevention is a requirement. It's inevitable. It's unavoidable, and it is necessary. But prevention cannot in itself be efficient if it's not supported by a mediation mechanism. And within the UN system, the mediation structure is still at the embryonic level. Therefore, prevention needs mediation, and this mediation needs to be decentralized between the various continents and also at the sub-region level. Gabon, when your deeply regretted father, Mr. Omar Bongo, played a critical role and a moderating role in Africa in general, and not just in your part of Africa. And what everybody, I think, would like, I think, is that Gabon, under your authority, continue this action as a stabilizer and moderating factor, and I would like to be interested in to know the impression that the president had.
Merci pour votre intervention.
Thank you for your intervention, your comments. It is clear, as I indicated earlier, that happens in various African countries is important to us. We care, and also it is vital for us to see that all of our countries enjoy durable peace. President Omar Dimba was indeed highly involved in a number of mediation efforts. And I agree with you. In other words, that prevention rhymes with mediation, but in most cases, we noticed that when President Omar Bongo could act quickly, as soon as possible, difficulties were reduced and the results were much easier or less difficult to get. Therefore, I follow you entirely and I agree that this role played by Gabon is important. And we definitely are going to work and continue in this direction. Gabon cannot remain insensitive to what is happening to its neighboring countries, but also to other countries on the African continent. And in as much as we are welcome each time, we will try each time to bring above all people to sit down and talk at the table. It is important to make sure that the parties involved talk with one another in order to avoid misunderstandings, because misunderstandings can lead to sometimes to very, very serious conflicts. And therefore, we are going to continue our efforts within the African Union and within a sub-regional organization in order to continue in this direction, which is the only possible direction for Gabon and for all the other countries in order to give peace one more chance. And in that sense, you can always and you will always be able to count of Gabon. Yeah?
Excellence, Monsieur le Président,
Excellencies, Mr. President, it's a pleasure and an honor to see you, but mostly a pleasure again. Thank you and welcome to New York. And my name is Agnès Marcaillou, and I would like to follow up on what the previous speakers have mentioned, especially you, Mr. President. You've just talked about misunderstandings and about prevention linked to the resolution of misunderstandings. But, and I would like to bring a new element as far as the prevention is concerned, which is coveting. This sub-region, Mr. President, is a very wealthy sub-region. Not only do you have an exceptional human resources and human wealth, but you also have natural resources which sometimes are unique in the world. And we know that wealth brings envy from neighbors or from uncontrolled factions in neighboring areas, and traffickers, especially armed weapons, and traffickers are very happy they right now, and as you know. And I was wondering if, within the framework of your measures and of your thinking about what prevention could be, if in the end maybe a multilateral management council for resources for countries that are exposed to risk, but and I think we're beyond potential at this point, with risk countries, and we know that borders are impossible to monitor, they are much too long, and your countries are very big. And so is that something that you have thought about, that you think is a good idea to think again about?
I know who you are, but the rest of the room doesn't. Would you please identify yourself?
Agnès Marcaillou.
Agnès Marcaillou.
À vous écouter, devrait-on
conclure qu'il est préférable d'être pauvre? It's preferable to be poor.
Et de ne pas avoir de richesse.
And not to have any wealth or anything.
Disons que il est important.
Well, let me say this. It is important. Dans le cadre and within the sub-regional framework, we have a lot more discussions about economic development now. And indeed, we try with all of our neighbors at the sub-regional level to look at the future together and to some extent to try to harmonize our development, our respective development. That's no easy task because each country has its own interest, its own strategies, and things need to be done by being careful not to overstep anybody's sovereignty. But the thinking goes into direction that in some cases, if a state, in order to develop an important project, such project could have a sub-regional dimension, and above all, we could avoid that one other state and two other states do the same project, and would reduce the scope of this project in the sense that now we're trying to organize markets at the sub-regional level. Therefore, we're trying to think along those lines, clearly. It's not easy. We're moving forward, nevertheless, interesting progress, and we are already thinking about sub-regional projects, especially in certain industries and sectors, and we think together about, for example, the forest industry. And it is the same in other areas, such as the energy sector, very critical, and the climate issues, of course, you know, bring us together to think about this and the secure issues. We've made a lot of progress since we do that, since we talk. We know this progress, and we are certainly going to continue, which I believe is the very best.
The gentleman behind you raised his hand first, right there. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Kim Bong-hyun. I'm a DPR of the Republic of Korea mission. This is my distinct honor for me to ask a question to Your Excellency President Obongo, President Gabong. We have Republic of Korea has a very good relations with Gabong for a long time, and I very clearly remember that when I was a young student. Your president visited Korea, and I took the street to welcome your president. And it was a very good memory for me, and still I'm very happy to see the good relations with the country of Gabon. When the Republic of Korea first made our own car, the name was Bongo. So it was a very popular car. And the name is Bongo because your president visited Korea, and it was a very good memory for me as well. And thank you very much for the preventive diplomacy. This is very important for the safety and the security of the world. And also, I very carefully listened to your view on the rule of law for prevention of the conflict. In this regard, I'd like to say that probably the regional organization of Africa, the African Union, should contribute to the stability of the African continent as a whole. And also the cooperation between the African Union as a regional the organization and the United Nations also are very, very important. In this regard, I'd like to ask you, Mr. President, that what is your vision when we talk about the rule of law in African continent, how you visualize your vision for the rule of law? For example, we need to institutionalize the rule of law as the regional organization, the African Union, maybe announcing the kind of the covenant among the members of the African Union that, for example, the military coup d'etat cannot be recognized by African Union as a whole. We have a very similar example in the Caribbean states that if any country establish the government by an unconstitutional way, then the members of the African Union cannot recognize the country, the government. How do you have that vision about the rule of law in the African Union? Thank you.
That concern of yours has already been taken into consideration by the African Union. We have moved a long way, you know, from the OAU now to the African Union, and the African Union position, you know, is very clear when it comes to rule of law. The African Union condemns any coup d'etat condemns, you know, access to power by force. And that's the case already in some countries where African Union has made strong statement, and where we, you know, some states are working with the African Union to try to find a solution. That is the case in Madagascar, for instance, and that, of course, was the problem, you know, in Niger, Guinea. So in all these different places, the position of African Union has been very clear. We, you know, governments have to give our organization, a Pan-African organization, you know, more power and more means in order to be able to not only make strong statement and to be able to intervene somewhat, you know. And the African Union also needs to be supported by other regional organizations and by the United Nations. Meaning that as long as, you know, African Union will not recognize a so-called government, you know, then nobody else will do it. So it should be that way. But we are pleased to see that the organization is moving towards that. And that's already been the case regarding some countries. Unfortunately, we're seeing now too many cases, you know, of coup d'etats. We've witnessed that in the past, you know, 6 months or so. And this is very troublesome. But we support, you know, the African Union organization, and it's already a principle now that in Africa we will not recognize a government, you know, that has come to power by sheer force or by coup d'etat. It's already a principle. No. So we're moving towards the right direction. But, you know, you have to admit that those are complicated matters. And we need them to be very supportive of our organization. And thank you, by the way, Barry, remembering us, you know, about President Bongo's visit to Korea. I was surprised myself because lately, as a defense minister, we made, you know, acquisition of medical equipment, mobile, you know, medical equipment. And I was surprised to see on the car, it was not Bongo 3.
Gentleman in the third row here.
Excellent, Monsieur le Président, Ali Bongo Ndimba. Je m'appelle Anatole Ndomba, représentant permanent de la Guinée équatoriale.
My name is Anatole Ndomba, I'm the Equatorial Guinea representative at the mission. And I just would like to say on behalf of our African group to welcome you here in New York. And I would like to tell you how much your presence here and your talk are important fodder for our work and our activity. And I would like to express all of our support of the entire African group, which is in full solidarity here at the sub-regional level within the United Nations for you know, the Gabonese presidency for the Security Council, especially in this year when the African country is dedicating itself to peace efforts, as was mentioned by Mr. Ping during its last trip here. Your Excellency, allow me to express again our congratulations once again for your access to the highest function of the state. And we are very happy with what you said today, because prevention, indeed, that means it's the dialogue that your Excellency, your father, Mr. Bongo, was a champion of, and we're very happy to see that you're following in his steps. Thank you very much.
Je sens bien dire que c'est tout à fait normal.
Thank you very much, and I want to tell you that it's very normal. It's business as usual for Gabon to maintain this kind of approach. And we believe that all of our African brothers would be would have, you know, denounced me in a way if I didn't follow the Omar Bongo's policy about for mediation and peace. So I didn't have any choice than to follow anyway. This type of policy.
And this will have to be the last question. Thank you.
Je vous remercie. Je suis le chargé.
I'd like to thank you. I'm the I work at the Benin Mission in New York, at the Benin Mission, our embassy. It's an honor, Mr. President, to have you here and to have you share with us your view on conflict prevention. Someone before me talked about the coveting of resources and wealth, and I would like to follow up a little bit on that comment, because as far as you know, conflict prevention, what role will the main powers in the world play, the main powers that manipulate and control our resources, and which are indeed the real instigators of conflicts in our countries. I hope my question was clear, Mr. President, so thank you.
Yeah, mais je dirais tout simplement que
simply say
les mécanismes
that
de prévention
prevention mechanisms are important. And I think I've explained that, and I think we all agree about that. Now, coveting, that's one thing. But you can covet, and it remains silent, or you can, you know, act on it. So when you covet, it means that you want something, and there are different ways of going by it. We don't have anything against coveting in theory or in principle, but in that case, you come officially, you present yourself, you say you have such resources as well in your country, and we're interested, and then you have instruments that are set up in all countries. That's how trade works, that's how business works, and that's it. I'm interested, what should I do to access those resources? And the coveting that you mentioned, it's like somebody sees a beautiful woman and covets. You have two ways, you know, either you try to seduce her and she says yes, or you go through force and you rape her. And now you're talking about raping. Rape must be, of course, condemned and sanctioned. But I must say that in the case of the state, unfortunately, we have a part of responsibility here. You can covet. Anyone can covet. It doesn't mean that you're going to succeed. And unfortunately, in a number of cases, we are doing the wrong thing. We're not opening the door or this window so that this can be done. The coveting by some part parties sometimes is aligned by a political aspiration of some people who say to themselves, well, if I help this such country or such power or such this or that to get what they want, me, I will also get what I want, because you know, they will help me to get what I want. That's the entire, you know, issue, a problematic issue, and I talked about that also, the monitoring of everything that happens, and also of private armies. If we decided to talk about the, at the level of Security Council about arms trafficking, it is because we want to work on that issue as well. Because it is essential that within the framework of prevention, we manage to talk clearly and loudly, and that everybody follows that direction. Unfortunately, too often, we see the people who have troubles feeding their family, feeding their people, by weapons. And when you know the cost of those weapons, the question is immediately, how do they do to pay for those weapons? I've always been stunned, because as a former defense minister, I can tell you that when I looked a little bit at the issue of weapons purchasing, and when I saw the cost of the weapons, for some of them at least, to me they were prohibitive. Nonetheless, and I'm sure you will agree with me, that the Gabon is not without resources. And though we have resources, limited, I decided to do less because of the cost. But we see somewhere else, in other parts, armed groups that have modern equipment, which some regular armies don't have sometimes. And here is the question, how do they do to pay for it? And that's where you reach very often to a hypocritical situation, because either we all want to live on a peaceful continent where rule of law is the rule, and in that case, everybody contributes and is good willing, and what is being asked to the African nation is very important, and we say that that African nations must make an effort to create those conditions, but we also say that it's imperative that we are helped. And we cannot be two faces and say on the one side that, you know, Africans should, you know, be in charge of African affairs and or be in charge of solving, you know, all the issues and set up good governance and fight against corruption, and on the other side to have another language and another message because you covered something. No, so that's a real problem, and the fact that we talk about it, that we set up all these mechanisms for prevention will help us to end to this situation, to all the things that you've mentioned. And that's one of the important issues that we need to be solved, but we shouldn't regret, of course, being wealthy with our resources. We, of course, need just better manage them and to, of course, and hopefully create an environment that is both political, which means rule of law, good governance, transparency, all of those set up mechanisms will have an impact on the way business is done. It's not possible to do things under the table in a country where the system is now moving towards more transparency, is moving towards more better management, better governance, and is fighting corruption. So that is everything that we're going to do on that side that is going to help reduce the problem that you've mentioned.
Mr. President, I owe you an exit from this room 2 minutes ago, so we'll keep the promise. The size of this crowd, which I think is the largest I've seen in the year and a half that I've worked here, is evidence of the intense interest in your visit. I want to thank you not only for appearing here, but for answering questions and speaking with such candor and with such humor. So once again, welcome and all the best to you.
I really like to thank the Institute for giving me this opportunity to address, you know, all of you on matters of, you know, importance for my country, and then sharing with you some of my thoughts. You know, thank you very much for giving me that opportunity.
You've been listening to the African Leaders Series, a production of the International Peace Institute, an independent think tank dedicated to the prevention and settlement of conflict. Working closely with the United Nations and its member states, IPI conducts policy research, convenes special events, and provides publications and other outreach to strengthen international peace and security institutions. Learn more at our website at www.internationalpeaceinstitute.org. Thanks for listening.